the winning side of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on VOB. And of course, you can call us at 4341790. You can send us a WhatsApp at 253-4679, or you can also send us an email at cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought in association with the very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
Hey, look at you stepping out in a designer dress and brand new shoes.
Well, I step up my winnings with Red Hot and Wild Nines.
It's the new Red Hot and Wild Nines. $10 instant scratch ticket from the Barbados Lottery with over $900,000 in cash prizes and 20 chances to win with a top prize of $100,000.
So you play Red Hot and Wild Nines yet?
Yes, but I didn't get new shoes like you.
Why not?
Because I'm not walking.
Step up your winnings with the new Red Hot and Wild Nines instant scratch ticket from the Barbados Lottery.
Well, the talk, of course, the cricket tongues are wagging from Brisbane, Australia, right through to Kensington Oval. You know why? Because India pulled off what was a sensational victory against the Australians. And there was someone who said that India defeated Australia with an Indian B team. Well, 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 what a performance. And it was really a performance worthy of commendation. It showed a lot of determination. It showed so many things. And, of course, we want to look at that this evening. We're going to go straight to Australia. Barrett is there. He doesn't have a lot of time because I imagine, as an Indian, he's going to be, oh, his smile is going to be as broad as Calcutta. And he's going to be with us for just about 5 minutes or so. And then, of course, we also want to get to the business of West Indies cricket. Yes, the first ODI starts at 1:30 in the morning. 1:30 in the morning, Eastern Caribbean time. And, of course, we hope the West Indies can win that game. Win the whole hog, as we say, in Caribbean parlance. But without any further ado, let's go to our good friend. Barrett, your smile is as broad as India. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm very well, Andrew, and hello to all your guests. I didn't sleep much last night because I still can't believe what I saw. It was, I think, one of the greatest comebacks in sport. Forget cricket, forget Indian cricket. Because you said it was India B who beat Australia. I say the bowling attack was India E or India F.
Oh, dear.
You imagine a bowling attack, right? Mm. Where you have four tests between five bowlers. And you're taking on the might of Australia in what they call the gabatoir, where they've not lost in like, what, 32 years. And they pulled it off. And they did not just like sneak home with a win. They bullied them and they smashed them around yesterday, and they convincingly won it. And not just yesterday. I thought the draw in Sydney was another incredible feat. Like, this whole summer, Andrew, has been a case of every time you think, okay, India can't do this, right? They've been 36 all out. They've lost Virat Kohli. Literally every second hour, they lose a cricketer, a fast bowler or someone. And you think India will lay down and say, okay, count me now, one, two, three. But they just didn't do it. They just kept jumping up. They just did not stay down. And Australia, after a point, were the ones who had to give up. We saw in Sydney, Ashwin and Vihari. One guy could not sit. He had not sat down for a day and a half because of his back. Vihari had torn his hamstring. He would not walk or run. And they batted 3.5 hours and saved a test match. And then you come to Brisbane, it's even crazier. So India did not have their top five fast bowling options. India did not have their top three spin bowling options. They played with a bunch of net bowlers. Mm. And they pulled it off. They pulled off the unthinkable. I think it is the greatest test match win for India. I really think it's the greatest moment in Indian cricket history. Yes, they won two World Cups, but those were with proper teams. Mm. This was like, I literally, Andrew, I ran as good a chance of playing in GABA as anyone on this tour.
You're right. Okay, before you go, because we hopefully get you back a little bit later on, is Tim Payne in trouble, you think?
He is in big trouble because you can't be losing to a team like this. And also, he's not had a great series behind the stumps as captain, as leader. So things aren't really going Tim Payne's way. And he, you remember his sledge to Ashwin, I'll see you at the GABA, Ash.
Yes,
they did
yes,
go to the
yes.
GABA and they humbled them. So, well, it's not looking good for Tim Payne as I leave you, Andrew.
Okay. But I hope you can come back because I know that you you got several things to do. But if you can, please join us again a little later on. All right. In fact, as we speak to him, he's on Zoom. His phone is going. Well, Philo Wallace has joined me as well. We got Dr. Asker Mansingh as well. We're going to be talking to Floyd Lamont Reefer, and we hope, of course, a little bit later on to talk to Roland Butcher. But without any further ado, let's go to Philo Wallace. Philo, your reaction to the Indian win. How are you, my friend?
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening to Dr. Ford and all your guests, and obviously the people in Barbados fighting COVID. My friend Carlisle Stewart is at Paragon. He just came off the phone with him.
He's at Paragon.
Obviously. Mm. Yeah, he's in Barbados.
And he's not a soldier. And he's not days. A soldier.
No, he started to grow here. And it's not black.
I see.
You know, and obviously, I just want to say, thanks for having me on. My good friend, Sherilyn Hart, who continues to wish me all the best here in England. We're two fighting with this COVID as well. But Andrew, I listened to Bharat, and but there's only one word I could describe the Indian cricket team. Mm. I think it is committed.
Mm.
It is a committed side.
Mm-hmm.
And the presence of head coach Ravi Shastri, who's been through the doldrums and the good parts of Indian cricket, would have instilled in those guys the importance of representing India, mm-hmm. Even without the Virat Kohli. And I know I read that, a lot of people saying India B team, but it's an Indian national side that beat Australia through commitment. Mm-hmm. They never, ever, they've rebounded from that 36 runs. And they rebounded magnificently. You also have to give credit to a different type of captain, a man called Ajinkya Rahane, who's quite cool, who's quite calm.
Very calm.
And he obviously came in after, we know what Kohli is like, there's a lot of rumors. He's, he's very animated. He likes to get things done his way. Ajinkya Rahane seems to be quite more relaxed, more focused, and more people driven. And he got those unknown cricketers, particularly the bowlers, to do what Kohli wanted the rest to do, to bowl out Australia twice and then the batsmen. You can't say anything less but commitment.
That is the word. That is the word. Commitment. A lot of it.
Andrew, you went into a
truckload of commitment.
You went into a fifth day.
Mm-hmm.
You went in on a fifth day with some cracks on
yes.
a pitch.
Yes.
Chasing 329.
Yeah, okay.
Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
328, and I got 329 for seven. And
tremendous,
the two youngest guys on the side.
Tremendous.
Absolutely.
Well,
only be commitment.
Yeah,
it
commitment.
Can only be commitment.
Well, I'm sure that
playing for India is the big thing.
Yeah, I'm sure that Dr. Asker Mansingh, who's Indian, will agree. Hello, Doctor. How are you? You've got roots in India. You must be on top of the world as well. Good evening to you, sir. Doctor Asker Mansingh.
Good evening.
Yes.
Let's just clarify immediately. I've got roots in India. I'm ethnically Indian, but I'm very much a West Indian, a Jamaican. So let's not get that crossed up. It was indeed a phenomenal victory. It was a victory which, there are two or three parallels. You talk about the greatest series. And I say it has to be up there. But you might recall the series in, I think it was 2003, perhaps, Australia versus India, in India, where India had lost the first test by 10 wickets, almost by 10. And then they were made to follow on in the second test. And Lakshman scored 81, Dravid got a century, and they went on to win that match and then beat Australia in the third test. That, to me, would be the only parallel series to this, where you get bowled out for 36 in Australia's backyard and you come back and beat it. But as far as this test match is concerned, if you remember 1984, West Indies versus England, second test, England set West Indies an improbable task to score in the last day. And Gordon Green scored a double century. Richard scored runs. But the reason I'm bringing this up is that in that match in 1984, you had Larry Gomes, who formed the anchor and scored a 92 not out. In this match, you had Pujara forming the anchor. And it just showed you how beautiful the game worked. You had one person who was making sure you're safe. You had the others rallying around them. And I thought that, this was test cricket at its best. The other parallel to draw from it is that, as you're hearing, the depleted Indian side, yet the bowlers got 20 wickets.
Yes.
Everybody played with the commitment that Philip Wallace spoke of. Mm-hmm. And obviously, your next segment is going to be West Indies with a depleted team as well. One hopes that you see that commitment tonight as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, stay with us, Doc, because we want to talk about some other things. Of course, Philo's with us, and I know that Floyd Lamont Reefer, who has joined us, is now, I believe, in Grenada and must be a very, very busy man, so we're not going to keep him too long. Floyd, the new coach of the Under 19, let me say hello to you. Happy New Year to you. And before we talk about your role, you must be maybe happy, because I understand that you were supported in India. Talk to us about that victory, Floyd. What a victory. Commitment is what Philo Wallace is saying. Floyd?
Well, good evening to everyone. Good evening, Andrew.
Yes,
indeed, it was a great victory for India. If you follow the series, you know, after the first test match, you know, the world Indian team bounced back from that humiliating defeat. You know, it shows character amongst the team. And as Philo said, commitment. But I want to go a bit further. You know, when you have elite athletes with that mindset, that elite athlete mindset, you know, mindset to win and the mindset to bounce back. You know, if I'm losing a game like that, it shows the characters within the team. It shows the leadership qualities within the team as well. And it only goes to show that the young men are very committed, like Philo said, and very professional in their mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right, we're going to stay with you, Floyd. Happy to be back as, well, you coach the top boys, the big guns. You're now coaching the under-19. I would imagine that you're happy to be back. And what's your first priority?
Well, yes, I'm here now with the Wainwright Ellis team. I'm doing some work with the Wainwright Ellis team with the Super 50 tournament. And then I'm coaching the under-19s as well to the World Cup. So all now we have, you know, been preparing programs for the youngsters to start, starting from next week.
Mm-hmm.
This program will be more scientific in terms of how they prepare and how they develop. You know, we'll be involving the biomechanists, the exercise physiologists. We're going to involve the nutritionists from early, the sports psychologists from early. So everything will be working, as you were saying, agile clockwork.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I'm looking forward to that. And it is a new way in terms of how the young men will be trained. It's going to be new for some of them. It's going to be tough. But as we all know, if you don't put in the hard work, if you don't put in the hard miles, you won't reap success.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, stay with us, Floyd. We're going to go to Dr. Mansinger, a very, very busy man making lots of money there in Jamaica. And, of course, Floyd and my very good friend Philo, who's smiling, maybe he's laughing. Let's go to Dr. Mansingh and talk about Hayden Walsh. What's the latest on him now? How is he doing? Have you spoken to him there in Bangladesh, Dr. Mansingh?
Well, we do have a doctor on tour who's looking after him, but the information we have is that he's actually remains asymptomatic, as one would expect.
Mm-hmm.
He's isolated in a part of the hotel, which is earmarked for such cases, and will continue to be there until he turns 2 negative tests, which typically takes about 2 weeks. So as far as his health is concerned, he's as healthy as he was, you know, before we knew he was positive.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, of course, is that it's going to rule him out of the one-day series. But in the end, health is more important, and he's absolutely fine.
Mm-hmm. Now, talk to us, Dr. Mansingh, about Hayden Walsh. Let's go back to Barbados. How many tests he would have had before he went to Bangladesh there in Barbados? How many?
Right. So the protocol that we have is that you do. He actually had 2 tests before he got to Bangladesh, and
two tests in Barbados. Okay.
Mm-hmm. He had a test done in Barbados, and I believe he had one done in England as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then got to Dhaka and had a test done there. Now, just point out that when they left the West Indies, they would have left as, you know, passengers on a flight. But everyone is advised to wear a mask, physically distant, and keep themselves sanitized. So he would have left with a negative test, would have gotten to England, had another test done there that was negative, got to Bangladesh. And once they got there, they went into separate isolated rooms where they had a test done on day 0, which is the day of arrival, and they had a test done on day 3. It was that test on day 3 that came back positive. Now, if you correlate that to the lifespan and the way that this virus behaves, typically it takes about 5 to 7 days for the virus to turn a positive test after you've caught it. So you could actually have that. And that is why we do repeated tests. That is why we isolate the players for a given period of time and make sure they get two negative tests before they can recongregate. And that is why we've had to resist players who insisted that they're going to break the rules and go into each other's rooms because of this very scenario. It takes 5 to 7 days. On average, it can take longer before you actually turn a positive. So everybody is told to behave as if each other has COVID. In other words, masks, physical distance, etc. And then you go into isolated rooms. And in his case, he came back positive at day 3. So he was transferred to a part of the hotel where he's isolated. And all of the players then had an additional test done on day 4. Which also came back negative for all the other players. And then we just continue with our testing and so on, so that they're now able to play. They play the practice match and they can play the matches tomorrow.
Mm. Doc, just before we go to the other doc, I'm sure that Dr. Ford has got some questions for you. When you heard the news that Walsh had contracted COVID-19, were you surprised? Did it surprise you?
Well, I mean, the surprise... As I said, the reason that you have these protocols is just for this eventuality.
Okay.
So it doesn't surprise you in the fact that, you know, somebody will turn a positive, because as you can see all over the world, you're having this sort of scenario. Don't forget that we actually had a positive test in the Caribbean as well for one of the players. But because we caught it in the Caribbean, we stopped him from traveling.
Mm-hmm.
In the CPL, likewise, when we did the pre-testing before we moved, we had 3 people who were positive and they were barred from traveling to Trinidad. So you're going to have people who come out as positives, asymptomatic, because 80% of people are asymptomatic.
Mm-hmm.
So was there a surprise that you take a group of people and one person is positive there? Not really. What I'm happy about is A, that we caught it before it had a chance to spread, and B, that everybody else followed the protocol, so nobody else has it.
Oh, Dr. Ford, speak to your other doctor. Good evening to you, Dr. Ford.
Good night to everyone and all the listeners. Dr. Mansingh, the protocol seemed to be pretty reasonable. The only defect in the protocol is since the players leave the West Indies, traverse one or two airports, they're on planes where they have to drink and eat, remove the masks for periods to do that. Also traverse the trip from the airport to the hotel in Bangladesh. We do know that there is a possibility of picking up an infection, even though you may distance and do all those things along the way. So my question to you is, why the stipulation for 3 days rather than 5 days prior to practicing, or even 7? If you wanted to be absolutely sure and careful, how do you rationalize the 3 days since someone could have caught it in the airport or just into Bangladesh?
Yeah, good question. I had to turn off my video because you're breaking up there. So I'm going to just leave it off for now. You're quite right that, you know, if you remember the earlier protocols, both in England and at the CPL, it was a longer period that was an isolated period. There are two aspects to it. Number one, a lot more is known about the virus now, and you're finding that most protocols are following exactly what we followed, which is that you have 3 days of isolation, 3 to 5 days of isolation. But the more important thing is turning back negative tests. So you would have had 4 tests within a week. That would have been negative. Number two, obviously, the playing schedules and so on, which shortened the tour. And we had to incorporate this period inside there. But you're going to find that more tours are following this because of the period of the duration of the tour, which tends to be quite long. And thirdly, we have had some serious issues with players in isolation, not just in cricket, in any sport. I don't know if you're following the Australian Open right now, but you see that people are going absolutely berserk with in-room isolation. As testing protocols have become more understood, you're going to find that the protocols in sport are moving more towards 3 to 5 days of isolation. But certainly, so let's get it clear. After 3 days, once you've done your 4th test, you're still not allowed to mix with the common public. But what we do allow is some in-squad training, because by this time you're more or less 97% sure that nobody has it. If you want to be absolutely pure, then you're absolutely correct that you spend 2 weeks in isolation, 1 week in your room and 1 week outside in clusters, which is what we've done in England, which is what we've done in CPL. But international sport is not going to be able to accommodate that right now.
That's the whole point. I mean, things have gone okay. But if we want safety and we want success with COVID cricket, you know, you can look at the worst case scenario where you go with the 3-day quarantine, someone slips through, you get into squad training, and you start the process of another incubation period for others, and eventually the tour could be called off because of sequential and, you know, increased positive tests. Do you think that when teams tour the West Indies, assuming we get through the our 50 over and our shorter 4-day tournament, do you think that it would be wise for us to go to the 5 days or 7 days for the tourists to ensure success? Because we cannot afford any slip-ups if we are to have a successful international tour in the West Indies, and the cricket West Indian economy depends on it. So
yeah,
what are your thoughts regarding the protocols for visitors here when our tours start?
Well, let's take two things in perspective. As you mentioned there, that there was a travel period on commercial flights and so on when we went to Bangladesh. And as you're aware, transmission in air travel through the airports these days, especially airports that we use, is extremely low. So it's probably more likely that you're going to catch it in your own community than you're going to catch it in air travel, as the figures are showing right now. Number two, that we caught Hayden Walsh after 3 days and so on is a success story, because that's exactly how the timing was set up. And his 5 to 7 day period was covered by these tests. And yes, you know, after 3 days, once you've turned back 4 negative tests, we feel that you can actually start some sort of clustering and some sort of distant training. Lastly, a lot of this depends on the rules of the country. So a lot of what we do in the Caribbean is also dictated by what the ministries of health are going to allow. You remember in CPL that Trinidad was absolutely insistent that there'd be 2 weeks. In New Zealand, there was 2 weeks. Ideally, what we should do, to be honest, is to have everybody quarantine for 2 weeks in their own home, you know, in a facility, and then go by a chartered plane, and then do your 3-5 day in the host country. But that international travel is not going to allow that. So I think what you're going to find is that the protocols we have going forward are those that are done in conjunction with the ministries of health of the countries that we're having our competition in, and those that are following the international norms. The ICC has guidelines for cricket published as recently as November, and those are things that we're adhering to. And these things will change as more is known about the disease and as more, you know, experience is gained.
But do you agree that it is better to err on the side of the cautious longer seclusion, with the players being separated for at least 5 days rather than the 3 days when we have our home tours here?
I don't know if that's absolutely necessary, depending on the circumstances of travel and so on and so forth, and where they're coming from. If our players are coming from that bubble straight back into competition here, then I think that has to be taken into consideration as well. But as I told you, ideally, I'd love 2 weeks. But you'll have all sorts of issues with that, both economically, with player mental health, with local authorities and so on. And I think the current sort of periods are anything from 3 to 7 days. But what's important in all of this is the number of negative tests as well. So it's not a matter of just turning up with a negative one test and you're out there mingling. Also, after that 3-day period, we're not asking people to sort of congregate in rooms. That's not allowed still. But what you do allow them to do is to go out into open spaces and do certain skill-specific training until that 7-day test comes back as well. So, listen, Dr. Ford, you're quite right that if given all of the facilities, you want to go a bit longer. But I think we have enough experience now to realize that the times that we're using falls into what international practice is.
So, Doc, would you then make the recommendation rather than 3-5?
No. What we're doing is we have our protocols for the country. And as I said, this is done in conjunction with the Ministry of Health.
Right.
So what we have for Super 50 and what we have for the Sri Lankan tour in Antigua is going to be recommendations of what international sport has in conjunction with what the laws of Antigua are and what the recommendations of their Ministry of Health are. And it's going to be a considered thing of both parties. So if you find that it's 5 days or 7 days, that's not necessarily because Hayden Walsh turned positive after 3 days. It's more because the laws of Antigua may dictate that. But what we will do is to ensure that you have that 5 to 7 day period, which is the most likely period to exhibit a positive test. It could be by frequent testing, and make sure that nobody mingles, that they remain in isolation for that period.
Yeah, you've told us that. But I guess the real question is, what's the probability of someone who's COVID positive and shedding using cricket gear in informal training, being able to pass it on to someone else, even though you're not supposed to put saliva on the ball and all that. The question is, can it happen in that setting?
Well, I'll tell you, there have been some lovely tests done, experiments done over the last 6 months using the coronavirus itself on a cricket ball. So you have addressed the clothing, and obviously you're noting what the experiment with has been done over the last 6-7 months, and not just a cricket ball, many balls, but cricket was one of them, is that they actually plastered attenuated virus, meaning virus that was dead, on a cricket ball, and then rolled it along the ground to see how much of the virus shed from the ball and how much clinged on it. And as the same experiments where they use a live virus and then threw the ball along the ground and saw how much of the virus remained on the ball. And once again, very, very little viral load was on the ball with the live virus. What that really showed is that the transmission through a ball itself is very, very, very minimal or unlikely, completely unlikely. What's more likely, obviously, is if you have clothing, pads, clothing, equipment, and one thing that is strictly prohibited is for people to exchange that with each other. In fact, even in dressing rooms and so on, when we are in that quarantine period, we don't even allow them to go inside the dressing room. You leave your bags outside and you practice within your space, so to speak. So you're quite right that those are considerations you've got to take, and those are considerations that are mitigated by the things that I've mentioned.
Final question, because we got to go to a break. Dr. Mansingh, it happened, Walsh testing positive for COVID-19. We are in Bangladesh. We start tomorrow morning, 1:30 Eastern Caribbean time. Do you have any concerns?
No, I think that, the protocols have been very robust. I think that, the bubble is very tight. And therefore, whether we're in Bangladesh or wherever, the integrity of the bubble obviously depends upon the integrity of the people in it. And I'll also point out that no bubble is 100% safe. So what you do is reduce that risk as much as you can. But I don't think that the guys are at any more risk than they were in Dubai, or that they were, when they were playing in England, when it was at the heat of its peak, the first peak. So I think that from the bubble perspective, I think they're fine, and the protocols have been followed to a T. Please remember that you also had positive tests in the IPL. You had positive tests in other tours as well. Mm-hmm. And the protocols were followed and those tours completed.
Mm-hmm. All right, Doc. We want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. Enjoy the rest of your evening. I'm sure it's going to be very special with your Indian connection.
Thank you so much. And good evening.
All right, good. So there you have it, Dr. Askar Mansingh. He was very much for the last half an hour or so. We're going to pause for business calls. When we come back, we're going to go to Philo Wallace. Of course, Floyd Reef is still with us. We're going to spend some time with him. And we also, a little bit later on, want to talk about the fact that Barbados fired Emerson Chapman as the head coach. I'm sure that Philo Wallace would want to make a comment on that. I mean, Barbados were absolutely brilliant last year. And we want to know from there and from far, why did you fire our good friend Trotty or Parkite like Philo Wallace and Larry Mears, who is our technical director? Let's pause for a business course. Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
Running low on phone credit? Top up your phone at any Barbados Lottery agent and stay connected with your friends and family. Topping up with the Barbados Lottery is convenient, as you can find an agent in almost every community. Plus, enjoy rewards in our promotions where you can win free credit, free data, and lottery merchandise. Top up with the Barbados Lottery today.
All right. Good evening to all. We are on Mason and Guest. I'm Andrew Mason, along with co-host Dr. Andrew Ford. And we're going to be, of course, spending some time with the new head coach of the under-19, Floyd Lamont Rifo, who I believe would have arrived in Grenada today. And we're obviously going to get some reaction to as well from Philo Wallace about the firing of Emerson Chapman and quite appropriately, Roland Butcher, who was a director. I don't know if Roland had anything to do with the firing of Emerson Trotman, but we'll certainly get his perspective a little bit later on. But let's spend a little bit of time with Floyd, a very busy man. Floyd, what are your expectations? You've got the youngsters. What's your long-term vision?